open a book and it invites you to fall in.
That was my North Star. I always sailed towards that star.
So to escape the beating every day, the bullying, I became a zealot for Maoism because I discovered that only when I recite Mao poems, the beating will stop.
Welcome to the National Writer Series from Interlaken Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton. Today, memoirist and novelist An Chi Minh talks about growing up in Shanghai during Mao's cultural revolution in China.
He says, man of humanity should refuse to preserve his life at the expense of that humanity. And Mao speaks beautifully. That's how he spellbound the entire nation. He's a poet, politician. He has this magic, charismatic quality.
An Chi Minh worked in a labor camp as a teenager, and later she was recruited as an actress at Madame Mao's Shanghai Film Studio. In 1984, she made the momentous move to the United States, knowing no English. But 8 years later, she wrote her memoir, Red Azalea, which became a national bestseller. Minh spoke with guest host Ron Hogan, creator of the literary website Beatrice.com and now an editor at Reagan Arts in New York City, a publishing house.
Good evening, and thank you for having us here. I hope over the next half hour or 40 minutes or so that we'll draw out some of the great themes of your stories and your memoirs and share them with the audience. And to do that, I want to start by setting the stage for your first memoir, Red Azalea. As we talked a little bit about in the introduction, you grew up during Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution, and in the school program, you were indoctrinated into the Cultural Revolution very early. You write about how you were groomed by the party to and inculcated with those values. And there was a point where one of your favorite teachers, you got called into essentially to denounce her.
Right. Well, it started because to save my mother always got herself in trouble, and like she did not mean it, but she was called to almost denounce it as anti-Mao, and was going to be reformed and put it away. And the incident was that she accidentally wiped her behind with a newspaper that's got Mao's picture on it. It was just like, we are poor, we couldn't afford toilet papers, and so we cut the newspaper. So I felt like I need to defend my mother. So my first writing was, I wrote this letter that my mother was going to read to the public at her work unit. And my writing, and I said, it's not the crime to be honest, because I was sick, and I was not giving time another incident I forgot to mention. It was that she was forced to do the propaganda leaflet. She wanted to write on the wax paper to be printed, and she accidentally to write "Long live Chairman Mao." She missed one word. It became turning to no life to Chairman Mao. It should be long, long life to Chairman Mao. Long, long life. 祝 Mao 主席万寿无疆. 1, 10,000 is like one stroke away from Wu means nothing. So 10,000 years to Mao became 0,000 years to Mao. And instantly she was, because the leaflet, it was everywhere, and my mother was instantly called as an anti-revolutionary, and she was put on the stage to be denounced, and I wrote this thing, and she read it. She says, you know, it's not a crime that I wrote it because I was sick, I was blood pressure, I was dizzy, I was not allowed medical leave, and I, by mistake. It's somebody who's in charge who did not allow me to get a rest, who should be responsible. And my mother was forgiven. So I think I see that my writing saved my mother. So I went on to school to really be a very hard student. Also because I was not from a three generation of labor families. And these people have medical care, they are the leading class in China. And we became second class citizen, and so we don't have a medical care, we don't have anything, only the working class. So their kids was allowed to bully me. So my time went to schools, got beaten all the time. And I think I wrote it in the Wild Ginger that was very handy. So to escape the beating every day, the bullying, I became a zealot for Maoism, because I discovered that only when I recite Mao poems, Mao quotations, the beating would stop, because they would be called anti-Mao if they beat somebody who's reciting Mao. And I get on to start to enter competition. I was selected by school to win the competition for the school. And with each winning, I got one Mao button, and I have 800 of them. Again, it comes in handy later on when I write become a Madam Mao and Mao. It's just so naturally, I'm filled with this thing. It's my childhood, it's my piano, it's my Beatles, it's my rock and roll. So I don't have to think, I can still recite just out of my head. So I became so good at the school, and so the teacher, the principal asked me to go on the stage to denounce my favorite teacher. It was to demonstrate that I can dedicate my life to the revolution, to liberate the world, the poor people in the world, especially in America. So we sacrifice our life so your kids can eat. Now, not only until I come to America, I learned that your parents tell you, finish your food on the plate, because people in China, children in China starving. But anyway, so I was crying when I was denouncing my favorite teacher. And I was given a medal of certificate. It says, Mao's good child. And I took it home and expected my mother to hang it on the wall. To my surprise, not only my mother did not put that certificate on the wall, she said to me, if you do that again, I will disown you.
And one of the fascinating things about how deeply the revolution had gotten its hooks into you at that impressionable age is that, I mean, you actually seriously contemplated, well, geez, do I have to turn my mom in for the, you know, for this?
Yes. When she said that, I did. Not only once. I was 10 years old, 11 years old, and my mother took four of us walking from one end of Shanghai to the other end of Shanghai looking for children's books. There are bookstores, yes, but the only books is Mao's books. So today I think about North Korea. You know, they must have the same thing. In order to build this like a Mao as a cult, like a religious figure, and that there's nothing else. So my mother was very frustrated. She came home, she says, can't be right. There's no children's book. And the 10-year-old me just turned to her and staring very coldly, I said, there's no need for children's book. Mao's book is the only book we need. And I remember my mother looking at me, was totally speechless and shocked. And I could sense she saw a monster coming from out of me. But in the meantime, I was her protector.
And how did you get from that stage where you were being groomed as a perfect example of Mao's good girl, to getting assigned to a work farm?
Oh, that's another thing, that one third of China was assigned there. So the Chinese people, they put online, say a lot of bad things, shame on me. Not only I exposed what's in Red Azalea, it's okay to talk about among my own people, and it's not okay to share with the world. To give a background about that labor camp, and I can only tell you what I know. We started because of America. The training, our goal as my schooling from I was like 8 years old all the way to 18 was to prepare to deal with Americans' invasion. Because you guys were in Vietnam, and we believed that China was going to be next. At least that was our leader told us. And Mao says, that was in our textbook, was Mao's words. He says, 为人民而死,重于泰山. When you serve the people, when you die, your death was the weight of a mountain. The other way is as light as a feather. A man of humanity should refuse to preserve his life at the expense of that humanity. And Mao speaks beautifully. That's how he spellbound the entire nation. He's a poet, politician. He has this magic, charismatic quality. And that's, he was my Chinese. So we followed him, and first we were sent, my school years were divided in three sections. One section was the army. I went to the Chinese Shanghai garrison, because I was the head of the Little Red Guard. And I would learn the moves, the combat moves, come back and teach my entire school. And the second section was to learn to be a peasant, so we can grow our rice and everything to support ourselves and support Vietnam. And so since like 14 years old, 15, we was assigned to live with peasants around Shanghai. The third one was to learn to be a worker, to make our own cotton, own textiles. So I worked three shifts. First one, three factories. One was Shanghai Stapler Factory, and Shanghai Number 7 Textile Factory. It's making T-shirts. And the other one is Shanghai Number 9 Silk Factory, make silk sheets. And what I remember the most was in the Shanghai garrison. Is it okay I show my moves?
Sure, please.
So I was asking the sponsor to make sure he has insurance covered. Every day, we would be giving a stick first, so we practice with the stick, because we don't have enough guns. So the stick and the drill instructor says, "预备用枪!" And then we have a mannequin, a straw figures with American soldier's helmet on it. So the move, the basic move, is to carry this thing and toward that mannequin, sa, 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 and just practice until it became second nature. And then I was taught to the second move is like you deal with the first soldier, and then the second US Marine probably will just come on this way. So you're gonna use the bottom of your gun when you do sa, and just yank him off, and in the meantime, you expect the other one from the behind, sha! So we do that move until it's very a smooth move, anyway. Oh, forget, I went off the track about the labor camp. It's hard to compress the history. It started with the Red Guards. Mao, now we know. Every Chinese know, you don't know. The Red Guards movement was a student movement. It's about democracy. It's about take over the school, make the school teach people instead of become more bourgeois. So it's the right of peasants to get an education. So education is not for the elite. Education is for the people, common people. So that we know, we did not know, during that student movement, the Red Guards, Mao was the game player. The true purpose of the student movement was to help Mao to get rid of his political opponent, Vice President Liu Shaoqi and Deng Xiaoping. Mao would never come out. Mao has no blood on his hands. He just talked to the students. 于天奋斗，其乐无穷；于地奋斗，其乐无穷；于人奋斗，其乐无穷. Translation, it's a pleasure to have fight with the heaven, pleasure to challenge the earth, pleasure to challenge the authority. We have the bourgeois authority in the headquarter is within the party. Don't be afraid, you have my support. And here go the student who just beat the vice, took out the vice chairman, Liu Shaoqi's family, beat him down, basically tortured him to later on he died, and he was cremated under a different name. And all 10 Mao's generals all who helped him succeed the revolution or die the same way. And so we achieved that. I remember that moment. You still see the picture. The vice chairman, Liu Shaoqi, was surrounded by these young students who says, "Dadao Liu Shaoqi, Dadao authority, challenge." And he was showing the Chinese law book. He says, "This is the law. I was voted as the vice president of the republic, law." And with Mao's support, and the students succeeded, and the enemy was gone. Mao was the god of China, the reddest sun. Now that's how my father got in trouble. My father's secret passion was astronomy, and he was punished because he taught a lesson on sunspots. And he was named anti-Mao because Mao, how dare you say Mao's got a spot, the sun's got a spot. That's how my father published, but anyway. So after that purpose was, goal was achieved, and students in the city, they were with weapons. The students started to get the weapon, attack the military compound, they tried to get the weapon, and in Shanghai we see all these like death. Anybody, the factions can drag their opposition people and denounce them and to say that he's a criminal. And to the point, the young children in Shanghai, I was at the time, we having fun reading these posters about death sentence. He said, Wang convict Ming is going to be sentenced to death. Li ji zhi xing, execution immediately. So you see blood, you see chaos, and it was that time, Mao says, it's time for our young people to get an education from a real peasant. The countryside is the real university. Now, this is how we were sent there, and there was a quota. Each family, you have two children, one gotta be peasant, go to countryside. We've got four, two of them needs to go. If you don't go, if I did not go, the neighborhood drama is not gonna stop. The group that come and do the drama in front of your door says, "Congratulations, congratulations, going to the countryside until you go." If you don't go, if I didn't go, my sister is not gonna get a job. It's gonna, entire family is going to be in trouble. So I went to the labor camp that way, which is one of the millions. Yeah.
And what you found there is everything that you've just told us about how, you know, the lofty public ideals of the revolution were covering up power grabs and people jostling and pushing their enemies out of the way for their own advantage, that you saw that going on at the level of the work farm as well, that there was constant, you call it a lip and teeth war of people denouncing each other and constantly trying to undermine each other for their own political advantage.
Well, I would say it was more of sexual suppression. Mm-hmm. You have young people in the labor camp. Mine is near East China Sea. My camp's got 20,000 people, and the entire area's got about 100,000 to 200,000 youth aged from 17 to 23, and all hormone raging. And we were sent to grow rice and cotton in the land that is so saturated with salt, there's nothing. So we built these military barracks, and then we just, one night, when I my first few days, in the wheat just shooting through the bed, it was just like a poking here. I woke up and I look, oh, it's got a wheat. It's so sharp, it's like a bamboo, just very, very, in the ancient time, they used it for making arrows. But they are so nasty. You just cut them, and the cotton is this big, it's never gonna grow. And then the cotton we grow eventually just go to the paper, make a paper, so it cannot be making clothes. But so it's the regulation. So how these people not get in trouble is to regulate their hormones. Now, we have no sex education. And I remember all I knew was, I was 16 years old, and I mean, my hormone kicked in, was naturally curious about this issue. It's a band issue. I only know that always a girl sitting next to me needs my help. And I vaguely know she has some things with men. So we grew up knowing that if you have anything going on with a male, and you are going to be looked down at, your name just ruined. So we have make sure we stay away from the boys. And when I discovered a book from the Looted Books, it got my interest because the title was 从头到脚,猴眼看人. So it's translate from head to toe, looking from monkey's eye. And in it, it's a medical book. And the illustration, and it has one sentence really made an impression, caught my attention. It's called, "The intercourse between a man and a woman is the highest form of revolutionary comradeship." So equipped with that, I went to the labor camp. Now, many years later, in 1994, I was on ABC, Good Morning America, being interviewed by Charlie Gibson. And he was asking me to talk about my love affair with a woman as the camp leader. And lots of American newspapers. And also I was put on the radio on homosexuality. And a psychiatrist came and announced analyzing about homosexuality. I had no idea. I think it's how would I explain to somebody that this has nothing to do with homosexuality. It's just when a woman, females are forbidden to contact, to even look at the male, what do they do? Mm-hmm. Now this is what we do. We, at the labor camp, after the work, we were sent with weapons and to patrol in the fields, because we are East China Sea, we are not too far, quote unquote, from Taiwan. You know, Taiwan is coming down, and they're gonna send their spy in the sampan and come to China. And we were taught to identify them. So the way to identify them is to first look at their feet. If their toes are this way, as they will claim themselves as fishermen. The fishermen, they have toes going this way, like a fan. But if their toes looks like this, this has been in the leather shoes. Unfortunately, we never caught one Taiwanese spy. We caught our own comrades making out in the cotton fields. Now, these are the things that I could not forget. It drove me to write Rosalia. The images of the 20 or 30 flashlight when we caught now, and you spotted, there you see a man, a young man, woman, crawling, looking for their underpants. And then the way to deal with this is the girl would be brought in to be worked on until she agreed that she was raped. And as you know, China's communist society is a crime-free society. What do we do with the rapist? The people's trial was held in the cafeteria. Should we give him death, execution, prison? Yes! It was people's will. This boy was dragged out. Because when the girl, after she read from the papers, and she was trembling, and the paper drop on the floor. She denounced him. So you talk about denunciations everywhere. And that's what we are living today. We can't talk about this, but that's everybody's living. So the girl watched her lover dragged out on a tractor. That depends, his life depends on his behavior. If he cooperate, he might be just prison, detention. If he refused to cooperate, it would be death, execution, on spot at that water tower. And the family will be built a 20 cents for the price of the bullet. And it's called to kill a hen to shock the monkeys. That's how we, the monkeys, get controlled in our own lot. The problem was this girl, she used to work with me side by side, and her name is Little Green. She has the most beautiful voice, because as a farmer, as a laborer, it's very boring. Like during the busy season, 18 hours planting rice. 18, and then you can't even get up by the end. And some entertainment is really help. So Little Green would, we kind of noticed that she would tie her braids. We all have our braids tied with brown color rubber band. She would tie it with a color rubber band. And she would embroider, put some flower on her underpants. And she would sing. We're picking our cottons, and when we were giving the pesticides and to the cottons, and she would sing, 一条大河波浪翻，风吹到花香两岸。 About how beautiful our motherland is and the scent of rice flowers. And after that incident, after her lover was dragged out, she started to have strange behaviors. She, in the middle of the night, she would come and open everybody's mosquitoes. And so mosquito come in and we can't sleep. And all, I would wake up, cannot find my shoes. So, and she was incoherent, had stopped singing, never washed herself, and then just, so eventually we sent to the leader the company leader who actually made that thing happen, the denunciation, everything she was the head, and she decided to send, she and I escort Little Green to Shanghai Mental Hospital where she was diagnosed as nervous breakdown. And she came back fat, because they fed her the medicine that made her so fat. She lost her willowy body and fat like the bear. We didn't really follow her, just let her wander around. And one day I was crossing the bridge. We had the man-made canal, we had a bridge. And the boatman says, you come down, are you from company number 7? I say, yes. She said, come down, identify the body. That was the first time I see a dead body. And it was face down. And the boat woman would just like flip it over, turn it over like an egg roll on a skillet. And it's a face that's almost unrecognizable. That was Little Green. And when I came to America, I couldn't forget that face. Her beautiful singing, her face. And then also, because of this, it changed us. So thinking, what are we doing? And this company leader, who's the hardcore communist, she started to doubt. Now you think about her action that caused these two young people's life to be wasted. And she was the person who gave the condolence to the grandma of Little Green, who was a old-time opera singer. And she gave her 500 yen. And the old lady, you can see a sense of grace and dignity, and she was there. And she had no expression on her face. She took the money and she stood there. And from there on, nobody's gonna ever mention Little Green or any story of like this. What bothered Yen, my company leader, was she says, you can see the Chinese people, this is a very common thing we're doing. It affects you. And she started questioning her authority. And I look at her, she shared with me her background, how she grew up, which was 3 generation, 1 room. Every night she would hear this voice. Her mother put out a scissor, she knew. Her mother hid a scissor under the pillow and tell her father, don't you dare. If you're gonna impregnate me again, I'm gonna poke you with the scissor. So to my friend, a marriage means rape. A man and woman together means rape. So when you see there is no book, this is what happened. people make their own assumption, conclusion, and so we start exchanging there. And she, in the meantime, she's falling in love with a company man, another man leader, that she can't express her emotion. So we got very close. We start coming into the mosquito. We can chat into the night and read her letters to her boyfriend. And I was the person's go-between, deliver the letters. And the man was so afraid to contact her and would not respond. And I would come and see her heartbroken faces, and I would start to make up stories about how this man wanted to kiss her and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually we got very close. So I would say by accident, I discovered the poetry of God.
You're listening to the National Writers Series from IPR News Radio. Coming up in the second half, Anchi Min talks about her friendship with actress Joan Chen and how it led to Min's move to the United States.
You're listening to the National Writers Series from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton. The National Writers Series is a year-long book festival held in the historic City Opera House in downtown Traverse City, Michigan. We return now to Ron Hogan's conversation with Anchi Min, author of 7 books, including her best-selling memoir, Red Azalea. Her latest is called The Cooked Seed.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how Red Azalea became the way that you got out of the work farm, out of the labor camp, but it wasn't really as if your situation improved marginally, but it was still a very hard spot to be in.
Would you like to know how I got out of the labor camp? Yeah. It was 1976. Nobody knew Mao was dying. That Madam Mao was preparing to take over China as the president, chairman of the Communist Party. And she knew she was a woman, but she knew to use the tool of film to make a campaign movie to brainwash the nation. And she was looking for this ideal Miss Proletarian China face, her ideal to put on the screen. And she sent talent scouts all over the nation to look for this face. And they came, these group of people came to my labor camp. And I remember I had been hungry because I was so slow. And my squad was working ahead of me. And the rule was if I did not finish work, I would not get to eat. By the time I go to the cafeteria, everything's closed. We saw a van, a white-colored van, appeared on the horizon. In the labor camp, we never see anything. There's not even a tree. It's just vast East China Sea, the land, bare land. And there's a white van, and it stopped on the edge of the rice paddy, and a group of people in green-colored army coat stepped out. Now, you know these are important with the army coat. And they came walking toward us. And I was so hungry, and I just thought I would possibly have my dinner tonight because everybody else stopped and staring at them. So I was working so hard. So from the telescope's point of view, I was the only moving creature on the entire horizon. That was how I was discovered. And they came to us, and they start to talk to people. And they start to talk to me in Mandarin. I did not speak Mandarin, I speak Shanghainese. But I can read in Mandarin, so I kind of struggle. I remember they asked me the question, how to get to the headquarters? So I was telling them, you go straight, you turn right, and so such and such, and I found they are not really listening to me. They were just like measuring me, looking at me like with. Later on, I know Madame Mao had her standards. You gotta be 100 pounds, 120, no, American, by the way, 125 pounds. And at the height must be between 5 feet four or 5 feet five or 5 feet six. And you have to have a feature that's everything against the traditional Chinese beauty, which is, you see me, big eyes, big nose, high cheekbones, big mouth. And the traditional Chinese beauty is like slanting eyes and tiny little nose and cherry mouth and porcelain skin. And Madame Mao wanted, I had a weather-beaten skin. So 2 weeks later, I got this notice, order. It says, An Qingming to be shipped to the Shanghai Film Studio for screen test. And at the bottom of the letter, on the top, the headquarters, the labor camp, wrote to the company leader, says, make sure, watch out for the reactions of the other comrades when An Qingming's going. And that was my first taste of going stardom on the tractor to Shanghai, be the screen, the face of China. And only when I landed there, I see thousands and thousands of beautiful people, and they all look like alike, big eyes, you know. And I have to go back and forth for about six times competition. So when I came to America, I see you're like a Miss America, Miss Universe, kind of similar, except the measurements the opposite. You got a wavy body. We have like a column, so you can carry manure. And yeah, it was in the film studio. I was. They asked me if I know how to perform. I did not know how to perform, and I found that the people through this six times competition, people who know perform so well, they know acting, they were eliminated. Why? Because when you know how to act, you have a cultural background. You've read books, mm-hmm. You know, you hear stories, and that's politically. Madame Mao is looking for politically reliable people. It's more important. So I got up, and then they say, what do you do? And I said, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know how to sing. I don't know how to do anything, perform. But I do know how to recite Mao quotations and Mao poems. They say, show us. Now, I want to show you this one, because that's my foreshadowing, because I'm going to use that to fool the Americans. But I'm not going to give away. Remind me to give that. So I'm going to show you. You mind?
Oh, please.
Okay. It's about Mao's poem about the winter flower, the Mayflower. And it's about Communist Party as a small flower, but it will spread the revolution until the whole world is liberated. And the Communist Party and Mao himself will be hiding among the blossoming flowers. A smile with delight. Feng Yu, Song Chun Gui, Fei Xue, Ying Chun Dao, Yi Shi Xuan Ya, Bai Zhang Bing, Yu Yu, Hua Zhi Qiao. It blossoms over the cliff and the snow. Qiao Ye Bu Zhen Chun, Zhi Ba Chun Lai Dao, Dai Dao, San Hua Lan Man Shi. Ta Zai. 从中笑. So, thank you. This one got me selected. And then the instructor says, screen test, ready, set, action. And to me, you, comrade Min, you drink water. So I drink water, I start drinking, and the director says, cut. See here? Miss Bourgeoisie, the correct way to drink water is to grab the mug, gulp it down in one breath, and wipe your mouth with both of your sleeves. However, in the middle of this, making this training, screen test and everything, we heard the funeral music, 4 o'clock, September 9th, 1976. Mao died. And I remember that moment that everybody crying is supposed to cry. And I found I have no tears. How shall I hide that so I would not be called an anti-Mao? So I go like this. Many people, October 8th, Madame Mao was overthrown. 2 months later, I was denounced as Madame Mao's political trash. For the next 8 years, I was punished. Make a long story short, I was not allowed to go to school, and my salary would be fixed as a laborer, a borrowed labor from the labor camp for $5 a month for the rest of my life. And I was very undepressed, and that was the purpose. It's a Chinese style of punishment. It's to drive you, to isolate you, so you can go and kill yourself. And I made a friend at the film studio, a young friend. She's 16 years old. She will, in the future, in a few years, she will become a sex symbol of Asia after she played the role in Bertolucci's Oscar-winning movie, The Last Emperor. Her name is Joan Chan. And she was told by the party boss not to talk to me. And she made an effort to talk to me, but her parents were warned, her grandmother was warned. Eventually, she agreed not to talk to me. And after the movie, she went to America. I'm getting myself ahead.
No, please, please. So to set the stage for what comes next is that Joan Chen eventually, you and she are writing each other from China and the States, and she's the one who helps you decide that your hope is in America, that you have to get out of China. And we'll circle back to that part of the story, but before we get into that part of the story, I want to talk a little bit about how everything we've talked about in Red Azalea, you came to the United States in 1984, mm-hmm. and Red Azalea came out about 8 or 9 years later.
8 years later.
Eight years later. And when you arrived here in 1984, you didn't know any English. Mm-hmm. And that book comes out 8 years later. And I just want to talk about the way that not only did this story come out of you, but that you had gotten so proficient in English that you were able to write a powerful memoir like Red Azalea with less than a decade's worth of English, starting to learn English very late in life. Mm-hmm. So that transition of what prompted you to tell that story in English to begin with?
Well, then we have to connect to that.
Yeah,
how I got here, is that okay?
Okay, please. Okay.
So Joan Chen and I start writing, because she feels secure enough to write from America to me. How are you? And I learned that she was a student in America and going to UCLA at the Northridge. And I thought, but you are a mega superstar in China. He says, well, I'm nobody here. I got to work my own tuition. I work, and all the Chinese students, they work to earn tuition. And I said, really? Can I be a student to work for tuition? Because if I don't know anything, I know how to work. I'm from the labor camp. And she says, well, you have to be a university student. Do you have any talent? Well, I don't have a talent, but I grew up painting Mao murals. So she said, maybe you should try art school. So that's how I tried the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. She helped me contact that school for a catalog. So when the catalog came, that's interesting. First was my name. And I did not know write my name in English. And I went to a wise man in the neighborhood who was about 75 years old. And he says, you should call yourself Angel. So Angel Min. And when my daughter, American born, 10 years old, I gave her my original copy of that application form with the name. I say, see, this is how your mother made it to America. Angel Min, my daughter. Mom, it's Angel Min. The second line was sex. I was supposed to circle female, but I did not know what sex meant. I consulted my dictionary, that's 1970 communist Chinese English dictionary, there is no word on sex. So I did not know whether I was male or female. So I took this application form to a friend who was a tour guide. I remember waiting for 4 hours after work, and 10 o'clock she showed up, and she was so tired. She said, okay, you go to school, middle school, Shanghai number 55 middle school, and just let me do it, or the rest of it. Okay, English writing, English language skill, poor, average, good, excellent, of course excellent. I did not know what she was. So I got accepted by the School of the Arts of Chicago. And I think the thing is, it's so amazing. There's very fine Chinese painters from the art school. They all got rejected. Somebody like me, who had no training, and who got accepted because the Art Institute in America said I had a potential. Now, with that potential, the next thing was to get my passport. And since my status is Mademoiselle's trash, it's gonna be hard. And then, now, American people have problem with me lying. Some people who wrote online says Aunt Chimin lied her way to America. I said, you try without lying. My first stop was to lie to my communist boss. You go to America, who's helping you? And I need to ask you questions. I say, okay. You ready? Ready. What's the difference between Albania and America? Comrade secretary, I need your help and advice. I am so ignorant. I don't know the world as you know. What do you really mean, difference? I mean, if America's got a proletarians. Oh, yes, of course, tons of proletarians. So are you a member of Communist Youth League of China? Yes. Do you intend to promote revolution in America to organize the proletarians in America? I said, yes, comrade. Good, make a good use of you. And 星星之火可以燎原, one tiny spark can light a whole wildfire of revolution in the West. You go. So I got my passport. The next stop was American visa consulate. The line was so long, the words came out that only the PhD candidate would be qualified. And I was not even a master's degree candidate. I was like a BA. And I figured out a way. I write a self-introduction, and I had my friend translate it. I recite the same way. I recite the Mao poem. And I thought to myself, I would not let the consul general interrupt me. If he or she interrupt me, she's gonna find out that I do not speak English. So when my name was called, a little before that, my parents were so afraid. And they just like, my father just said, you're not gonna make it. You're not gonna make it. And I just feel like if I don't make it, I can kill myself anyway. So I went there. When my names were called, I get up, and you just have the same voice, I'm projecting myself. My name is An Chimin. I would like to go to United States of America. I wanted to learn filmmaking. I wanted to be an artist. And I have to recite the whole thing, and I saw this person was looking at me. I thought, do not interrupt me. He's going to interrupt me. And this eyes, I remember the eyes, like a blue eyes and like a really like reminds me cat. I was losing my mind and I do say faster and faster, faster. Eventually I finish, I go, and then the person say, okay. And I understand that, okay. Immediately, the curtain was closed on me. You never go to any consulate, they have a curtain. In China, they have to guard the on curtain because for us, it's a life and death. If we don't get the visa, we'll go kill ourselves. So you don't let go. So the consulate, they invent this curtain. If they don't stop talking to you, and we move to the next window with the Chinese secretary. And she's like, you think you fooled Americans? You're just lucky. Americans, they like people with crazy determination. Here you go. I got my visa slip, went home. Oh, my parents opened the door. They're leaning on each other. My father, my mother was this way. And then my father was so pale. And they did not have the guts to ask me, did you get it? So eventually when I broke down the news, my mother's knee just gave in. She was fall on the floor. She said, I can't see, I can't see, I can't see. And so I got the visa and then my father says, you're gonna get caught because you don't speak English. So I got on the airplane and was the first time after I was landing in Seattle, transiting to Chicago, I saw below me was a star. It was like a Milky Way. And I thought, the Mao quotation entered my mind. It's the socialism is thriving day after day, and the capitalism is going down the drain day after day, and rotting. I said, this is how they rot? And after I came down and I followed people, I remember first impression of America. I have never seen so many different color of eyes and hair and clothes. So I followed them to the immigration. And then as holding my passport, I was determined to say what I was going to project myself to say. And when next, I go in there, present my passport. So you welcome to America. You come here for schooling? I didn't understand. I understand. I say, thank you very much. And then he says, I say, thank you. And I see the face going slow. Huh? And I say, thank you very much. And he pointed. He take away my passport, he go, that room. I was escorted to the deportation room, where I waited for the translator to come. It was about 40 minutes, but for me, it was 4 years. And eventually, the translator who came who speak accented Chinese, I broke down and I said, I did not have the fortune to die in China, and please give me a chance. Because my family owes so much, just the ticket to here alone cost me 15 years of my salary. My feet are already on American soil. And this person says, you know, Miss Min, you're gonna be the burden of our society. You come to United for college and you don't speak a word of English. How, you can't explain that. I can't let you go. I'm sorry. And your English, it's obvious, you just, and I say, give me a chance. I will manage. I will speak English, learn to speak English in 3 months. If I don't, I deport myself. And I just broke down. And this person stared at me and left the room abruptly. And she went out to, they had a discussion with the immigration officer. The two of them discovered a clause in my paper, I-20. It says, upon the arrival of the student, if whose English is not sufficient, she'll be sent to the English program for 6 months at the University of Illinois Circle Campus, Tutorium English Language. And so they come back, and that's how I got the job I entered. And then that was...
Great. And so we'll find out a little bit about what happened next. I'm sure you all have plenty of questions about that, and we will get to that shortly. But for right now, in lieu of a reading, you said you have a different kind of performance that you would like to share with us tonight.
And nowadays, I think the best way to show you my my book is about this soundtrack that I carry in my head. It's in songs. One that the American, it's a mix. It's a boiling pot. Peasant, American, so I'm just gonna show you. First of all, I'm not allowed to sing because I'm out of practice for all these years. For Chinese, it's shameful to present something that's not perfect to your guest. And I thought, what the heck? The Americans don't know the difference. Memory, hello in the moonlight. I kept dream of the old days. Life was beautiful then. 山淡淡的那个开花哟，红艳艳 ，burnt out ends of smoky days, the still cold smell of morning， 朋友来了又好啊。 When friends come, we treat them, we entertain them with wines. By friends, we mean Russia, North Korea, and Vietnam. And 若是那豺狼来了, when the wolves come, you know who wolf is. 迎接他的腰, 傲烈强 Touch me, it's so easy to leave me in. How along with the memory of my days in the sun 朝霞迎了彩叮叮当当当当的阳城 Don't cry for me, Argentina. There can be miracle. What you can do when you believe, oh, you will. You will, when you believe. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that with me. Thank you.
That was Anchi Min at the National Writers Series talking with Ron Hogan. Min is the author of the memoir Red Azalea. Learn more about the National Writers Series and upcoming events at nationalwritersseries.org. And listen to past programs at interlochenpublicradio.org. For IPR, I'm Linnea Melkerig.